This podcast replay is brought to you by Sloman's Home Security. The first 40 Big O listeners right now, dial 1-800-ALARM-ME. We'll get this limited time offer, a free doorbell camera that connects directly to your smartphone with installation of your Sloman's Shield. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME. Keep your family safe. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
Welcome inside the paint on the biggest game day of the year for the Miami Heat.
Ira Whitman, and Clay, can I need to work for 1 second for breaking news?
Uh-oh.
I get a call this morning from Brent Musburger's gambling outlet out in Vegas, Vizin or whatever it's called out there. They want me on the show, and I say I can't because I have the Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint show, and you got to have your priorities. And then they go to me, well, what about all these Heat rumors of COVID? And I'm like, what Heat rumors of COVID? I hate sleeping this time of year because I'm always worried I'm going to miss something. My wife always goes to me, you should shut off your phone in case you get butt dialed by Clay after a Sunday night show. And I'm like,
which
no.
Did happen. Which did
and
happen.
I'm like, no, something
fact.
Might happen.
Fact.
And so I went to Twitter and there were all these rumors out there that two Heat players did not travel back from Philadelphia. And I'm like, that makes no sense because they're not on the injury report. And if nothing else, the NBA would at least address that. So I made some calls and woke up some people way too early in the morning. Folks, it's not a case of two Heat players did not travel back with the team. Every player traveled back. Two Heat staffers did not travel back. Jose Pineda, the Spanish play-by-play voice, the Heat released that the other day, and also a team therapist who either tested positive or showed signs, he did not travel back. So yes, two members of the Heat traveling party did not travel back, but all players were in Philly, are now back in Miami, and as of now, we're clear to play, and these are the sign of the times. And to go a little deeper into this, basically the NBA has told everyone, don't test, let's just get through the season. Let's just get through the season. We'll deal with everything. We'll put everyone in quarantine if we have to later. So that's where it stands. But it just shows you, as we get closer to the league's signature moment, the NBA Finals, we're still part of this cycle. In this series, we saw Al Horford test out the first game, couldn't play. Miraculously, 48 hours, he's back on the court. So for those seeing the rumors on Twitter this morning for the first time, the Heat are not losing players due to COVID, but yes, there is concern. Now back to our regularly scheduled Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint. Clay Ferraro?
And to be clear, when you say concern, the Heat are, there are kind of ramped up protocols a little bit. They're, you know, and completely understand why, but we in the media, they're trying to make sure that if we're anywhere near players, you're masked, you're vaxxed, you're boosted, all of that. So there is a level of
We're getting yelled at. We were crowding PJ Tucker the other day, and Tim Donovan, who can be forceful when needed, he was basically like, get back. So, like, you understand where they are. And again, all media have to be vaccinated and boosted to be what they call tier one, to be with the players that shoot around, to be able to talk to them directly when there's interaction pregame and things like that. There is distancing postgame. Players are on a podium. Media is seated further back. So there's a distance level there. They are trying to avoid people approaching the players. But you know what, Clay? It's not like players can't go to a supermarket. It's not like players can't be out in public, you know, or pick up a family member at the airport. And they are dissuading that. They're basically almost begging all players, please, just stay away. You have maybe 2.5 more weeks. Let's just get through this. And you know what? If we have to report that Bam Adebayo is in protocols on July 3rd, we'll gladly do that. But let's make it to the finish line there. That's where we are, the Heat 6 victories from an NBA championship.
So I'm going to switch it up a little bit because you mentioned the injuries in the crosstalk. I was going to start about just this series as a whole. It's the strangest series I've ever seen. So we're going to get to that coming up in just a little bit. But I want to go back to the injuries because I do think it maybe from the inside, it is a bigger deal even than is being projected on the outside. So let us know what you're hearing. Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, and even on down to guys like Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker.
Yeah, Kyle Lowry, Tyler Hero, I'm not going to understate. Ramona Shelburne of ESPN reported yesterday that Tyler has the kind of groin injury that would require typically 2 to 4 weeks to get better. And we know that. That's what a groin injury is. That's the kind of thing you're most sensitive when it's coming to a tear or something like that. The thought now is, and this sounds terrible, but if he tears it, who cares? He'll have 4 months to heal it. And I think Tyler almost feels the same way. But Clay, you can say that. And you can say you're going to try. But at that moment of truth, when you can drive Tyler those running long bank shot layup floaters. If you don't feel right at the moment, you shoot the pull-up instead. He's struggling in this series, and we're seeing that right away. So this might not be something that was in the moment that kept him out of last game, but might have even been before that. I don't see how he can be a factor in the balance of the series. The good news is there. We'll get to this later in the show. Victor Oladipo stepped up. You have a reliable or at least feasible option in that regard. I think the Jimmy Butler issue is real. I don't think he has his explosion. He can't get around players. He can't put them on his shoulder or his hip to draw those fouls. They simply can stay step for step with him. So you're talking a guy, what was it, 18 free throws, 16 free throws in the opener of the series, two free throws in the game when he missed half the game, zero free throws last game. You know, it's interesting. You read the Zach Lowe article he posted on ESPN today. We've seen tons of analysis. ESPN has hours of shows. To me, it's as simple as this. If Jimmy Butler can't get to the free throw line, the Heat can't win this series. It's just that simple. So it's almost like if you're going to put a parlay on the Heat winning the series, take the over on the Jimmy free throws. Because to me, those goes more in hand as any Heat winning stat than I think anything else in this series.
Yeah, and I do want to address the officiating here. Because I think when you go back and you watch a couple of these games that happened in Boston, there were plays where Jimmy Butler was fouled. And they were not called. And he should have gone to the free throw line. Now, he does not have the level of explosiveness, clearly. And you could see it when you go back, especially first half of game three. It's not there. It is frustrating, Ira, when you have Stephen A. Smith, before that game even starts, screaming to the world, let's call it what it is. Boston's getting all the calls tonight. And I think Michael Wilbon said they're going to get all the calls they didn't get in game three. They got all the calls in game three as well. It's getting absurd. And, yes. And there was a – I need to go back and see who posted because I want to give him credit. This is not because the Heat aren't taking the ball into the paint. And this is John Jablanka on Twitter. The Heat are taking the ball into the paint, yet they still shot, what, 40 fewer free throws?
Yeah, it was like 68-28 or something like that. Yeah, Heat have had 14 free throws each of the last two games. The Celtics have been 30-plus, even the game they lost, correct.
I do think, and you asked the question, by the way, and credit to you, because Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler were up there, and you asked the question about the free throw shooting, and you intentionally did not go the officiating route, yet the reaction from Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry I thought was telling, and this is just me. I felt like the Heat in Game 4 thought they were going to get Scott Foster, and I think the entire world felt like they were going to get Scott Foster. And I think that's part of what was playing with Stephen. And this isn't just Scott Foster. The officiating was bad in game three as well. And the officiating was not a reason why they lost game four. I do think it's a reason why game three was a lot closer than it should have been. It's not the reason why they lost game four. But Ira, you're right. They're not going to win this series if Jimmy Butler can't get to the free throw line. And if he's clearly worse than is being led on, then that lack of explosiveness is going to be a problem, and it's going to cost them the series. At the same time, can we get some sort of equity here? It's getting absurd to watch from a distance. It's even worse when you know people on the inside who are doing this game nationally for ABC and ESPN can just blatantly say it, and everybody's cool with it. Because they know it's coming. And I don't know if it's because they want Boston in the finals and not Miami. I don't know what it is, but it has to be equitable. It's getting ridiculous, Ira. And there's my rant for it. I'm with you. I do think the health is a major issue here. I didn't plan on going on an officiating rant this morning. It just kind of happened. But I do think when it impacts a series as much as it has so far, and you're seeing it play out the way that I think a lot of people were fearing that it would, it has to change in these last three games. And I do think it's going to impact these last three games.
You know, the coaching narrative always feeds into this. And so after every game, the Celtics subtly will say, well, if they're going to play bully ball, if they're going to be physical, if they're going to shove us around, we have to push back. But just like I said it, so they say three words about the Heat harshly. They're going to shove us. If they're going to bully us, if they're going to turn this into war, we have to do more. So it's like they're going three for one in getting the narrative out there. And it's always been this way. It's been this way with Pat Riley coaching against the Celtics. It's been the way with Kevin McHale and Kurt Rambis clotheslining and the diatribes after it. Heat Knicks, we heard that. One Heat part owner wanted to go to court over officiating and things like that. You hear things like that all the time. So to me, it's a case of you have to tune it out a little anyway and not sort of foster it where it's in your head. So this is where I get jealous of Clay Ferraro.
Foster.
And that was unintentional. So this is where I'm jealous of Clay being part of a visual medium at Local 10. So I asked that question to Jimmy Butler and to Kyle Lowry. They're sitting there together on the podium. Jimmy answers it. Kyle just leans back. I ask about the officiating. He's like, well, there's no way for me in words to type exactly what he said because he said nothing, or to paint sort of the moment. But you could see it, that Kyle realized you get fined for this. It does you no good after the fact. But damn, it was freaking frustrating out there. So since we probably don't have the video, and Sean, I'm not going to make you try to get it real quick. Kyle was just like, and just leaned back in his chair as if to sort of send the message of, what do you want me to do? What can I say? What's going to make a difference? Now, the other comment you remember was Victor Oladipo, and he was very honest about it. He says, we have to make the referees notice. So
we have to sell it better.
Which is a terrible phrase. You shouldn't have to sell a foul. And also, when you hear the word sell it, I always go back to soccer. How they don't sell it. They cringe as if they've been shot out there. So to me, that's the total difference. I hope it doesn't become, Clay Ferraro, the point where you have to start selling fouls. I hope it can be a point in this best 2 out of 3 Heat-Celtics series now where a foul is a foul, a non-foul isn't a non-foul, and we all understand, like players miss free throws, like players commit turnovers, there will be some missed calls. Usually a coach after a game, if his team is in single-digit turnovers, he'll be fine with that, right, Clay? If the Heat only have 9 turnovers tonight, you're fine with it, right?
Of course.
If the Celtics only have 9 turnovers, Celtics Nation is fine with that. So there will be officiating mistakes, but preferably not 68-28 to that degree also. That's where it gets a little bit obscene, unless you're telling me one team is uber passive and the other team is uber aggressive. And I swear I've seen two teams play almost the exact same style of ball to this point.
Yeah, well, okay, and I think I you hit on the nail on the head, and this is what I wanted to get to with some of these numbers, and I should have said this to Sean, so I apologize. But when you look at per game in this series, the Celtics are shooting 25 shots per game inside 5 feet. The Heat are shooting 23. So it's difference of only 2 per game. Free throws per game. I'm not going to go through all the, but if you check me out on Twitter at ClayWPLG, I retweeted it. It's all there. The point you made about both of these teams playing similar games. It's not like one team is driving to the basket and the other one is just settling. That's not how this is going. The thing that was really frustrating, if you go back to game 3, there was a moment, I think it was 2 consecutive possessions, where Gabe Vincent lifted his arm a little bit. It was not a push off. But it was called a push off because Daniel Tice went flying backwards. Didn't even fall down.
Right.
Just flew backwards. Other end of the floor, Jaylen Brown does the same thing. And I can't remember who it was that fell down, but it was clear and they didn't call it. So I don't care if you're going to call it one way or the other. Call it equitable on both sides. And that's what's frustrating. And Ira, I will say this and I'm not just going to do this because you're my boy and I appreciate you, but I am going to air that tonight. I mean, I've already put together my piece for tonight on our 5 o'clock newscast, where you asked the question of Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler, and their reaction is Kyle leans back and like kind of puts his head down, and Jimmy like looks at him and laughs and says, "I didn't say anything of the sort about the officiate. It's bad. It's got to change. The good news so far," and we're going to move on to other topics. "The good news so far is it has not cost Miami or Boston, for that matter, a game. The Heat would have won game 1 regardless."
Good.
Boston would have
won
game
4. Thank you for adding that addendum. And that's important,
yes,
because no matter what comes out of it, at least through 4 games, the officiating has not decided the series. It has impacted the series. And those are 2 very important different words. We have seen moments and games and series where you can say the officiating decided the series. We're not at that point yet. These teams are incredibly evenly matched. These teams play an incredibly equitable defensive style in their approach. These teams play hard and try hard. These teams are very uneven. These teams' greatest offensive stars can have absolute clunkers. Jaylen Brown has had clunkers in the series. Jimmy Butler has had clunkers in the series. And that's the difference. The Warriors out West are getting much more consistent top-tier play throughout the series, last night's game being the lone outlier. That's why they look so much better than either of the teams in the East. This is not, you know, Eric Spoelstra goes, this isn't Heat Knicks circa late 1990s. No, not for the physicality or violence, but but for the grit, it really is. It can be hard to watch at times, Clay.
Yeah, and I think part of this, as we get into the weirdest series ever topic, is that I because it's so physical, I feel like it psychologically takes so much out of each team to win a game. And I do feel like there's a little bit of a psychological letdown in the next game. And I think we saw that to this point. I think that changes now moving forward. I think
yeah, because now the stakes, it's almost like the stakes are doubled. Because now you can't say, so the Celtics can just exhale. No, once you're down 3-2, once you get to the brink of elimination, it's the toughest time in any part of the series. So this is different. These three games right now, it's not about home court. It's not about officiating. It's about being your best of the entire season. And this is the brutal reality of the NBA. Mark Cuban addressed this when he spoke about the play-in tournament and the scheduling for the playoffs and how the season goes so long. The Heat right now, let's see, I think it was 5 exhibition games, takes you at 87. First round against Atlanta, 5 games, takes you to, my math's really good, 92. 6 games against the Sixers in the second round, takes you to 98. 4 games so far here. You're 102 games into the season. You should not be 102 games into the season in your most important moment of the season. The schedule is too long. The playoffs have proven too grueling. So what we're seeing is playoffs of attrition, and that sucks. Because I'm going to put it this way. Clay Ferraro, Local 10, do you believe that Miami Heat we're seeing right now is the best version of the Miami Heat?
No.
Do you think the Boston Celtics we're seeing right now, compared to what they did over the second half of the season, is the best version of the Boston Celtics?
No.
That's a shame. That's just a shame. There's a reason European soccer doesn't have playoffs. The entire season means as much. You have your table. You have your relegation. You have your team to move up because they value every game. In the EPL, game one is as important as the game played on May 22nd. That's not the case in the NBA. Mark Cuban came out yesterday and said, what the play-in round has done is given us a great week of basketball, but it's compacted the rest of the season. Clay, you remember these breaks, these 2-3-day breaks during the playoffs. We would complain in the media because we'd have to fill it. You with features, me with stories. But on the other hand, the Heat didn't practice yesterday and did not hold a shoot-around right now. Clay Ferraro is not getting ready to boom and hustle down to FTX Arena. There is no shoot-around right now. Think about that, folks. The Miami Heat walked off the court at 11:15 p.m. on Monday, didn't practice at all on Tuesday, and will not even have a walkthrough until about 5:15 tonight at FTX Arena. Teams are exhausted, so they're even trading in preparation for recovery time. That's the problem with this also. I'd rather see the best of these teams. We sure as hell, you know, you mentioned it, Clay, Zach Lowe mentioned it. We're just not right now. It's stuck in the mud, and you're right.
Yeah, and I do think the series would be in the mud regardless with these two teams because of how they play. But you would at least have like those moments where you see the stars being the stars. And again, Jimmy was that in game one. I don't think the Peyton Pritchard play, I don't think that caused it with Jimmy Butler. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a doctor. It looked bad, but I don't think that's why we're here. I do think it's the constant pounding that they have to go through over and over again. And you're exactly
right. Especially in a series like this versus, you know, sort of a softer style still in the Western Conference, you get through that better. Yes.
So we got a lot more to get to as the show goes on. Please, and thank you for hitting the like button so far. 305 Domi, never going to happen. Never changing the background. It's simply not going to happen as bad as it looks. I do want to get more into the injury situation because I want to see what the Heat can do when it comes to adjustments, if anything, to try to make up for this. And also, we're going to talk about the big one tonight. We're going to get Ira Winderman's prediction for this game. Or maybe we're not. That look on his face, he's not willing. That and a lot more coming up here on Inside the Paint.
This podcast replay is brought to you by Sloman's Home Security. The first 40 Big O listeners right now, dial 1-800-ALARM-ME. We'll get this limited time offer, a free doorbell camera that connects directly to your smartphone with installation of your Sloman's Shield. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME. Keep your family safe. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
Welcome back to Inside the Paint. Please drop your questions, your comments, and Ira, we got a good one from Carlos. He says that Big O has stated that Bam Adebayo's contract is a bad contract. Do you agree?
I disagree. One, you can't equate every dollar to performance. There's not an absolute bar that if you play this level, you get this amount of money. It's market demand. You couldn't afford to lose Bam. And the equivalency I'm going to give you, Clay, is this. The Phoenix Suns had a similar decision to make with DeAndre Ayton. Great player. Well, actually, very good player. Let me put it that way. Borderline all-star. And they decided, we're not sure if he's a max player, so we're going to let him become a restricted free agent. And because of that, they might lose him because they took that chance. So to me, you have to pay market value because you can't afford to start all over again and look for another Bam Adebayo or look for another DeAndre Ayton. So the contract should have come into it. So whether you're saying Bam is fulfilling his mandate as a max player is another thing. And again, you're building a team. It's not an island. You're not saying we need five individual players to always be at their best. Bam fits this team. I don't think there's another team in the NBA he could go to and be the same Bam. But he fits this team for this reason. Because 75% of his value is coming on the defensive end. He's a one-man zone. He makes the Miami Heat defense the number four ranked defense this season in the NBA defensive ranking. That's why he's here. Offensive end, yes, he might drive you to distraction. He probably is going to have one of the lowest scoring averages for a max player in the league because that's not his part of the court. But we were speaking to Orlando Alzagari in our crosstalk when he came to Bam having a great game three, dynamic 31 points, nothing in game four. He plays off his teammates. And if Jimmy Butler is struggling and Kyle Lowry can't beat his defender and you're expecting Bam to go 1-on-2 against Robert Williams and Al Horford, that's not going to happen. That's not going to work. And Bam is not going to do it. He's not going to force the ball in there. Now, you have certain guys like Shaquille O'Neal, someone like that who's going to go through two people, go hard to the rim and get it. It's not who Bam is. That's not his game. That's not his makeup. He can't do that. So I think Bam is playing the right game. Comes down to coaching. It comes down to teammates. This Heat team is five men on a string on defense and on offense. And if Max Strus is not making shots, and the three-pointers aren't there, and guys aren't slowing the game by getting to the foul line, Bam will look bad. But you know what? Everyone looked bad. Who was the star of the game of Game 4? You could tell me Victor Oladipo, because basically when a guy overachieves, we always praise that. But you saw all the stats. The total scoring by the starting lineup, lowest ever since they measured starter scoring when they delineated starters. The fact the starting lineup was outscored by Jason Tatum. The fact that Victor Oladipo outscored the starting lineup. Don't point to that game, Orlando Alzagari, and saying, this is evidence Bam was bad. Because if you're going to point to that game, I'll point to it and say, this is evidence the Heat are bad. So do you want to make that collective decision and collective judgment on that one game? That, to me, is kind of silly. Bam has had enough good offensive games and enough great defensive games to justify where he stands in the league and on the payroll.
And so I agree with you. I disagree with Big O. There's nothing wrong with the contract. There's nothing wrong with the player. I think you can look around the league and there are so many max players that aren't nearly as impactful as Bam Adebayo. I went back and I watched that game four. And the very first possession I thought was telling, Ira, Bam got the ball at the free throw line. He was actually in rhythm. But when you looked in front of him, you had Al Horford guarding him on one side and Rob Williams creeping up on the other in the lane. And so they were building a wall with the two of them. It was like they said, all right, early on in this game, we're going to take Bam away. Correct. Now, this is my question. And this is where I think it falls on coaching. Maybe it falls on Kyle Lowry to get in Bam's ear. Because we did see a moment in game three, by the way, where Jaylen Brown was on Bam, guarding him head up.
Right.
And Kyle Lowry screamed at Bam, go! Go! And Bam charged into his chest and hit a pretty left-handed hook shot. So to me, Ira, there has to be a conversation if you want Bam to take over that game, because this is not the usual game plan. You have to tell him when you've got that 15-footer in rhythm and you see Rob Williams coming up to build the wall, I need you to take that 15-footer. Because in the course of the Heat offense, the way it is usually played, that 15-footer is not the best shot. And what they're coached to do is then move the ball around to try to find a better shot. But in this series, it may be the best shot that you're going to get in that possession. So as to the question, is Bam Adebayo's contract a bad contract? No, Duncan Robinson's contract is a bad contract. And I wouldn't have said that a few weeks ago. It's probably still movable. They'll find a way to do it, whatever. It's a bad contract right now. He's unplayable. With that said, Bam Adebayo gives you so much on the defensive end of the floor. And if you decide that you want to run the offense through him and you tell him, Bam, go take that shot, I think he'll take it. I just think he's so – he's a team player, maybe to a fault, but I also think if people go to him and say, Bam, we need you to take shots that you normally won't take, he'll gladly do it because he'll feel like it's for the good of the team. And to your point, this is to bring it full circle. If Jimmy Butler is indeed so badly hurt that he can't get to the free throw line, he can't have that level of explosiveness, then the offense is going to have to come from somewhere. Whether it's Kyle Lowry all of a sudden coming out of nowhere and hitting threes and scoring like he did in the game in Boston towards the end of the regular season. It's going to have to come from somewhere. Maybe it is Bam, but somebody has to have that conversation with him because it's not in the course of the Heat offense for him to do that.
And Clay, I want to go back to something. And folks, if you missed this, go listen to the podcast of our first segment of the Sloman's Home Security Inside the Paint Show. We were talking about free throws. Well, Clay, here's the deal. If the Celtics are shooting 38 free throws, let's assume four or five of them are at ones. You're talking over 20 possessions when the Celtics are coming off the free throw line and can reset their defense when the Heat are coming down and the Heat are playing in that hard half-court offense. So again, Boston going to the foul line, not only is it a matter of them getting points, it's also a matter of them setting their defense when they get all those whistles. Well, it's harder for the entire Heat team to play in half court, and it's harder for Bam Adebayo to play in half court. He is one of the best transition big men in the league. He might not have those hard rim runs for dunks, but he gets out there and he leads the break on the wing also. So again, if the Heat are going to get all those foul calls and they're going to stop the game and Boston's going to reset their defense and they're going to throw three or four back there after the made free throw, that's a difference also. If the Heat are playing off of Celtics free throws, it makes it that much harder to attack that Boston defense. So that's where the whistles come into play also. That's where they come into play for Bam. Bam wants to get out in transition. Kyle wants the throw ahead. Jimmy wants to catch the pitch aheads. So you have to get more of that. But if the game is in the mud and you're letting them shoot all the free throws, you don't get that. And by conversely, when the Heat don't shoot free throws, Boston can get off to the races. So there are so many interlocking elements, and that's what you see in a playoff series. Rarely is it one element. So often it's two, three, four when they come together. That's what we're seeing in this series. This is the typical battle of attrition, number one, but also a battle of constant adjustments. I sort of hate that word as if teams weren't adjusting all year. But like Eric Spoelstra would say, to use his words, this is 10X right now when it comes to adjustments and things like that.
And before we get on to the adjustments, I do want to keep hitting on the Bam Adebayo topic because people are asking questions about this. Two Extremes says, well, if that's Bam's mentality, then that makes him a bad center. That's not what you're looking for. You can't ask someone, you can't just pick and choose who you want them to be. And look, as great as Alonzo Mourning was, he could never defend the perimeter like Bam Adebayo does. Better rim protector. Alonzo Mourning, one of the best rim protectors.
Drop coverage,
In recent NBA memory. Bam Adebayo is a different player. And part of what he does so well on defense is because he loves working within the team concept. He loves the idea of that's him. And just because he doesn't then choose to not be a team player on offense, you can't just pick and choose how you want a guy to work. Now, again, I'll say it. If somebody goes to Bam and says, look, in the team concept now, the way things are in this series, our adjustment has to be you need to just be the guy. Jimmy can't be the guy right now because he's too hurt. Tyler can't be the guy right now because he's too hurt. Kyle Lowry can't be the guy.
Then you're done anyway. Then you're done anyway. If you're telling me that Jimmy can't be Jimmy and Kyle can't, Kyle can't be Kyle and Tyler can't be – then you're done anyway. Here's the deal. And I want to see who asked that question there. Here's my question for this. And it is this. The same texture would come on after they smashed the like button and they would tell us, why is Bam forcing the ball one on two? Why is Bam forcing the ball one on three? And Clay, you knew this. Zoe, when he first came in the NBA, never passed the ball. There were all these edits of his possessions in Charlotte where it was ridiculous. He'd get the ball, he'd go. He'd get the ball, he'd go. He never passed the damn thing. So there's part two of that, that we would have our people on the chat board here on our YouTube chat who would be going, Bam's got to stop forcing the ball. That's not the right shot. You can't have it both ways, folks. There is the right play to make. LeBron, for years, people criticized him with the Heat. When he drew the double and he kicked the ball out for the jumper, someone missed. LeBron should have gone. And Skip Bayless and all these nitwits or whatever would sort of point that way. No, Bam's got to make the right basketball play. And like you said, when Kyle Lowry sees him one-on-one with a slower-footed defender, he has to go. When he sees him with a drop defender who's back in the paint, he has to trust the 15-foot jumper. I agree that. But you still got to make the right basketball play. Because as soon as the other defense gets you making the wrong basketball play, now some players are transcendent. They can succeed making the wrong play. I think LeBron was that. Michael Jordan was that. You have a certain degree of players who can do that. But I don't think you want to wind up in that situation.
Kelly asks, why won't we see two big men playing at the same time like we've seen from Boston? And the simple answer is because you don't have two big men that are versatile like Boston's are. I mean, it's either Dwayne Dedmon, for as well as he's played at times this year, he's not Al Horford.
In this series, it really isn't working for him. And he barely started big men at P.J. Tucker. So you're saying to me, Clay, what did we mention? 102 games in the season. Why don't you change your style? Folks, think about that. I've gotten so many things. They should start Yurtsev in. You know, you're saying they should start Victor Oladipo. They need a lineup change. Folks, you are 102 games into your season. If you are who you are right now. It's like me and my wife, 26, 27 years into our marriage. This is it right now. You know, yeah, we'll spice it up and maybe go to Las Olas on Saturday.
I don't need to hear this. I don't need to hear this.
But you are who you are. Maybe you go to the specialty store, but you are who you are. It's the same thing with the Heat. You're 102 games in. If what you are isn't good enough, you can't be changing it up now. You can't spice things up. Eric Spoelstra can't go in there and light a romantic candle and make it different. This is who you are.
Well, and more than that, Ira, they don't have the personnel. I mean, Omer Yurtsev is not Al Horford. You can't – the way the Heat play defense, it's part of what makes them great. But it's right. Also predicated on switching everything. You can't have Dwayne Dedmon consistently switched off and guarding Jason Tatum. You can't consistently have Omer Yurtsev switched off and guarding Jaylen Brown. That's not going to work. So – for people who ask the question, that's why. And the flip of that is you can't – this is the problem in the modern NBA with trying to play two big men. You can have a guy who dribbles the ball, dribble around until he gets a bunch of screens and finds the matchup that he wants. You can't just dribble around until Omer Yurtsev is being guarded by Peyton Pritchard in the post. That's not how it works. And so it's – and by the way, there were a couple of times where I think Kyle Lowry was matched up onto Al Horford at one point. So the Heat are okay with that sort of thing, but there's a limit to it when you're talking about playing multiple big men. Okay, adjustments. What can they do, Ira? And this is probably going to stretch into the next segment, so we'll hit it after the break. Based on what you know about the Heat's injury situation, who's in, who's out, what are the adjustments that they can make? Is it a Duncan Robinson break in case of emergency type game? What adjustments that people are asking for can they not make? What do you see and how does this play out?
You adjust to your injury situation. So you can say, well, if Tyler's willing to push through, we're going to play Tyler, sixth man of the year award winner. You have to adjust and you have to get an early eye on him, whether it's in today's walkthrough, whether it's his pregame shooting when he's out there with the coaches, whether it's the start of the game. And you can't force him to be what he can't be. And if he has no explosion and he can't get back on defense, you have to pull him. So your adjustment there is that. The adjustment to that adjustment is going with more Victor Oladipo, who looked good. Hell, he made the first shot of the game 7 minutes into the game the other day.
That was insane.
That was crazy. That was crazy. So at least he was on a little bit. So that's an adjustment. You're going to have to adjust if Jimmy can't have the explosion. Well, when Jimmy was out during the season, you went more with a three-pointer all-or-nothing approach. You might have to do that if anyone could draw and kick or play inside-outside with Bam Adebayo. So I think the adjustments right now are you adjust to your health. You adjust to the ambulatory. But I don't think that means bringing in an Omer Yurtsev. I don't think that means playing a Markieff Morris. I think that ship has sailed. You don't have a game for that. You can't say, hey, guys, those playbooks we gave you before the Hawks series, before the Sixers series, before this series, I want you to toss them. We got something new, and this is fantastic. You can't. We're at the end of May already. We started this whole mishigas back in October for our Yiddish speakers out there. Like, enough already right now. You've got to be who you are. So I think the adjustments are purely because of injury. You know who you are. I don't expect transparency, even with all the gambling, that if Jimmy has no explosion, there's no reason the Heat on the injury report have to say Jimmy Butler, questionable, no explosion. Tyler Hero, questionable, can't really move both legs at the same time. I get it, but you will see it. Heat fan, you will see it, especially if you're at FTX Arena tonight and you have a chance to isolate off the ball. See what players are doing off the ball. Because if you feel something is off, whether it's Jimmy with the knee or Tyler with the groin, you will see them far less active when they're on the weak side of the court. And that, to me, is the difference. When Bam Adebayo had his great game on Saturday, he ran, according to the NBA's tracking, 3 miles in that game.
Crazy.
He was active the entire time. When you're hurting, you're not active. So if you're at FTX Arena or you have a good big screen and can notice stuff off the ball, I think what happens off the ball will give you real insight into what the Heat can do on the ball tonight.
And Kelly says, as far as Bam goes and playing two bigs, well, yeah, if Bam's guarding around the perimeter, then you know, you can't do that because then you have no rim protector. That's not a thing that's happening in this series. I don't remember more than a couple of instances where the Celtics have been wide open inside. That's not a thing that's not the problem in this series. There are so many other problems, and you can't just pick and choose a couple of possessions that played out a certain way and then throw away all the ones that played out really well defensively. The bottom line for the Heat, and Ira brought this up, if they're not scoring on one end of the floor, and Eric Spoelstra, who never talks about offensive problems, ever, mm-hmm. He said after game four, our offense let us down because it didn't allow us, and he didn't go this far, but it didn't allow them to get back and set their defense. Too many easy points for Boston. Right. That was the problem in game four. That, and there was just no energy. Not a matter of Bam not playing. It's not a matter of playing two bigs together. There's so many other issues that we've gotten to so far and we'll get to as the show rolls on. Coming up, last segment. Is there a place at all for Duncan Robinson on this team in this series? That and more coming up next here on Inside the Paint.
This podcast replay is brought to you by Sloman's Home Security. The first 40 Big O listeners right now, dial 1-800-ALARM-ME. We'll get this limited time offer, a free doorbell camera that connects directly to your smartphone with installation of your Sloman's Shield. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME. Keep your family safe. Call 1-800-ALARM-ME.
Miami Sports Fanatics asks Ira. See what I did there? Tyler Hero, Gut, do you think he plays tonight?
Oh, that's, you know what? I'm really waiting on my injury report for that because I just don't think he's going to have his explosiveness. I think Tyler Hero will be active tonight. There's no reason not to be. But I'll be very curious to see if he goes out there, if they need to. A lot of times Eric Spoelstra has told us this is not a matter of the situation. Guys, if they can play, they can play. I don't necessarily buy that. I think Eric does weigh the situation. Up in a series, sit out a player. In a good rhythm, don't force a player in. So it might be if the Heat get off to a good start and are rolling and he doesn't have to play Tyler Hero, then he doesn't. If the Heat are down 18-1 and he had the option, which he didn't in game four in Boston, to roll out Tyler Hero, he probably will. So I think the game ultimately will dictate if and the degree of Tyler Hero we see. And what I've gone back to on all of this, Clay, is this. The Heat approach from day one of the regular season, and especially day one of the playoffs, is they are in it to win a championship, not just to win this game, not just to win this series. Even now, I think there's somewhat of a long view in play. So if the Heat feel they can win this game without Tyler, save him for game six, maybe game seven, maybe the NBA finals, I still think there's more than just the moment in play. Eric Spoelstra will never say that, because he wants his players focused in the moment. But organizationally, I think you have to step back just a little bit also. So to me, I think sort of time and place and situation could impact Tyler's decision as well tonight. I think they will do everything they can to have him active and then literally play it minute by minute from there.
And this is one of the rare cases where I think we genuinely disagree. And maybe it's just the nuance of the phrasing of it. I don't think it's a long game thing with Tyler Hero. And the reason why I'm saying that is because those were the exact words that Joe Varden used in his column with The Athletic yesterday. And it made me cringe.
Yes.
I think what it is, it's more that, and I think the Kyle Lowry situation is a perfect one. You have to determine if a player being on the floor at whatever mm-hmm. percentage they are helps you win that game more than another player at 100%. And with Kyle Lowry, it was, hey, in the Philly series, where you have craftier type players, smaller type players, it made more sense to play him at 100% than it did Kyle Lowry at whatever percentage he was. And then, oh, by the way, his hamstring probably did improve slightly, whatever it was from the Philly series and from when he wasn't playing in the Atlanta series. I think with the Tyler Hero situation, it's one of those where if you think he can give you enough and you watch him in shoot around and you watch him, because I'm sure he training staff is really smart. They're going to put him through the paces. They're going to put him in situations where he's going to have to make that decision that you mentioned earlier on right. in the show, where he chooses the pull up over the drive to the bucket. And I think that's going to determine whether or not and how much. Now, I do think if they start to fall behind, then maybe Spo says, all right, we need a spark. So Tyler at 40%, whatever it is, it's better than us getting nothing right now. Like, we need to have something. So, not to get the last word on this, but I do want to move on. That's kind of where my take is on it.
And with one thing, I'll demand.
And let me get the last word.
And the one thing I would say is, what might be fascinating is if they even try Victor Oladipo off the bench first ahead of Tyler. That could tell you something.
And this is where I was going next, because the continuation of that question was, do you see any scenario where, because of his defense, Victor Oladipo starts in place of Max Strus? I don't see that, because I think the way this Heat starting lineup is constructed, first off, Strus is good enough defensively. He's not a good or great. I would put him at slightly above average. He's been fine. His defense hasn't been the problem. You need the spacing. And for all that Victor Oladipo does well, standing there and shooting three-point shots, even though he made the first one, standing there and shooting three-point shots is not his forte. It never has been, and it's not going to be unless
Victor Oladipo
to change his game.
I agree. Yeah. Right.
So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at on that. Other adjustments that the Heat could potentially make, and I want to get into this chatter with Duncan Robinson. There's not a place for him in this series, Ira. And maybe if you fall behind by a ton, and maybe you disagree with me on this, but all I needed to see in game four was him miss a couple of shots, but more importantly, the foul on Jason Tatum shooting a three-pointer. It was a gut punch. And Ira, I'm sorry, but how many times do we have to see poor decisions defensively from Duncan Robinson? I'm sorry. You can say what you want about the try hard, the lack of ability, the lack of lateral movement. It's the poor decisions, fouling three-point shooters, fouling guys underneath the basket, weak fouls to give them a three-point play. It's that kind of stuff that there is no place for in this series. And look, it's almost to the point where I don't even care if he's hitting three-point shots. What he takes away on the defensive end of the floor, when you combine the lack of ability to guard, but also the poor decision-making, there's no place for him in this series. And I think it's going to have to be a long summer of figuring out what he can be on the defensive end of the floor to make him playable when it gets to these moment of truths defensively.
Two things. I mean, first of all, I always say lack of ability creates and leads to instability. So a foul like you saw on Jaylen Brown or other plays is, because you can't be in the right place, right time and place, you wind up having to try to compensate by doing something wrong. It's the equivalency of an offensive lineman in the NFL getting his butt beat and reaching out and holding someone, because that's their only option, because they don't have the foot speed, they don't have the strength in that situation to do it. We're seeing that with Duncan. It's posted an interesting story at SunSentinel.com on Duncan Robinson. That five-year, $90 million contract he signed really isn't $90 million. He has about $10 million in incentives or guarantees to make. One of them, a very interesting clause, was if the Heat at any point in that contract win a championship, he can get his final $10 million guarantee. Well, he could ride the coattails this year. So the Heat covered themselves and said, he also has to appear at least in 70 regular season games that season, average at least 25 minutes that season, appear in three quarters of his team's games in the postseason, and average 25 minutes in the postseason. He's below the games appeared now. He's way below the threshold of minutes played. He's averaging about 11 plus or so. So I think the Heat were smart in that respect, because even they realized Duncan might be part of a championship team, but he might not be the reason they are a championship team. And we're seeing that all play out right now. And it's a matter of, he's more of a specialist. You know what, Clayton, it's interesting, because you and I, from when we started doing our Sloman's Inside the Paint, you know, show way back when, even before our good friends at Sloman's Home Security signed on, we talked about this Duncan contract and how it's so different. Because previously, when the Heat had one-dimensional shooters, going back to Jason Capono, going back even more recently to James Jones, they reached a point where they realized they couldn't play them starters' minutes or even rotation minutes because the defense would catch up to them. And that's what made the contract to Duncan so interesting in the first place. Didn't they realize this point was coming? And maybe it's just because they finally got Max Strus, they realized there's a better option. It's going to be interesting. And I think that he could package the number 27 first-round draft choice. I think that he could put another sweetener with Duncanson to move to Duncanson with Duncan to move him, because that'll be the way of getting rid of him. So we always talk about players. Are they good enough to be traded on their own as a value to another team, or does there have to be a sweetener? And, of course, the ultimate this season was Russell Westbrook with the Lakers, where you realize if you want to get rid of that horrific contract, you have to attach a first-round pick or something else. I think that could be Duncan also. So I'm curious. I'm curious the level of the sweetener that the Heat go to move on from Duncan. I think that's going to be really interesting. I agree.
I agree. And hopefully we're not talking strictly about off-season moves the next time we meet here next Wednesday. Hopefully we're still talking about games. But it's – I keep going back to this. I can deal with missing shots. I can deal with, you know, the lack of ability. And I do think you're right that some of the fouls are because you're not there quickly enough. But, man, the Jason Tatum three-pointer foul to me, that was where I was like, that's it. Like, you can't do it anymore because there's going to come a point. And I'm going to switch gears back to a comment that we just got from Miami Sports Fanatics. There comes a point where you're like, we can't afford that. You're almost lucky that that happened in a game that you were going to lose regardless. But if you get to a game, and I do think as crazy as this sounds, because I felt this way for each of the last two games, I think we're going to get to the point now with this series where it's going to be possession for possession. It's not going to be a blowout. That can't happen. It can't happen in the second quarter. It can't happen at the end of the first quarter. And it certainly can't happen in the fourth quarter. You can't allow that to change a game. Now, Miami Sports Fanatics brings up a comment about the officiating. And we talked about that a lot about that earlier in the program. But I want to talk specifically about his comment about game four. He says he felt like it took away the physicality from the Heat in game four. I think it did in game three. And I think, and that's the game where, and I was actually listening to Ruth Riley Hunter and Jason Jackson. I've never once heard Ruth Riley Hunter talk about officiating. I mean, I love listening to her analysis. She's so good and she's so on point. And you can hear it's kind of a player's perspective where it's like, sure, you got to play through officiating. Ira, it was the first time I ever heard her talk about officiating and how uneven it was and how bad it was. And it was a lot of comments about it because it was terrible. I think it took away their physicality in that game. Maybe in game four, had they been able to score enough early on to set their defense on the other end, maybe we could be having that conversation. And again, the officiating was bad, but it has not caused a team to lose a game so far. In game five tonight, you can't let the fear of bad officiating affect your physicality. And this gets to your point. You have to go out there and be you. You have to be physical. And hopefully on the offensive end of the floor, you're getting more buckets. Hopefully it's one of those things where, hey, role players play better at home. You have a big Max Strus game. Gabe Vincent steps up and hits a couple of shots off the bench like he did in game one. But you can't let the concern of bad officiating seep in and take away from your physicality, because if you do that, you've already lost. And I do think maybe that fear was part of the reason why game four was so bad, not the reason why they lost, but you can't let that impact you the rest of the series.
Yeah, and you got to move on that. And if you're going in with that in your head, and I don't think that was the case in game four, you're in trouble anyway. You go out and you play the game. The NBA, I mean, look, these are the best officials the NBA have left. They pair the staff at the start of the playoffs. They cut after the first round. They cut after the second round. So if you're complaining about these officials, these are still who the NBA believe are the best. And again, I go back to my comment of, if a team has nine or fewer turnovers, under 10 turnovers, you're saying great game, there will be nine mistakes by the officiating crew. There just will be. That's a good game. That's just what happens. In an NBA game, teams commit turnovers, errors. Team miss free throws, mistakes. Things happen. They happen with the officials also. You just don't want it to get egregious, but you have to be the team that's the instigator. You have to be the team that plays with force, that gets you to the foul line. I agree. And you also have to be smart and avoid foul trouble, because we've learned in this series there are irreplaceable players. Bam gets in foul trouble, you're in trouble. There's no easy answer. PJ Tucker gets in foul trouble to a degree with his defense, you're in trouble. There is no easy answer there. Same thing with Jimmy Butler. You also have to play smart. You want to be aggressive, but you don't want to be stupid aggressive.
Yeah, and to that point, somebody asks, Lenny asks about playing Markieff Morris instead of PJ Tucker.
Again, 102 games into this, you are who you are. PJ Tucker, when he missed the Markieff Morris, when he missed the 58 games, that ship has sailed. This is who you are. There is no going to the laboratory. When you're going into the laboratory at the end of May, you're in deep whatever you want to call it.
Well, and I think his question is about being thin up front, and I think probably the assumption, and not to put words in your mouth, that PJ being shorter than Markieff Morris, maybe you have to get taller. That's not the issue with this series. It's not like guys are just shooting over PJ Tucker. What PJ Tucker brings you in the ability to switch off, guard Jason Tatum, switch off onto Jaylen Brown, and you're fine with that. Switch off onto Al Horford, and you're fine with that. Guys aren't shooting over him. That's not the problem. There are plenty of other issues that this team is going through that are far bigger than that. So, Ira, I know we don't really have a feel for this, but do you have – is a prediction even worth asking you about for tonight? How do you see tonight playing out based on what you know?
Based on what I know, the second half of the season, based on what I've seen to this point, the Boston Celtics are the better basketball team than the Miami Heat. They have more talent on their roster. They have a defensive system that was number one in the NBA and has shown it. So again, I think it's going to have to be, if the Heat not overachieving, the Heat overcoming. The Heat, to win any game in the series, has to be a better version of themselves than the Celtics do. Because the Celtics have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, the Miami Heat have Jimmy Butler. So unless Kyle Lowry gets one of those 20-point fourth quarters, or someone steps up and Tyler Hero makes his breakthrough, it simply will be harder for the Heat. So for the Heat to win tonight and to win the series, they have to play the better team game. Boston has a little bit more leeway, and that's what we saw in game four, and that's what we've seen in Boston's victories. Still comes out to the injury report. Does Marcus Smart play? Does Robert Williams play? Does Tyler Hero play? We have to wait to see how that plays out as well.
Is this a must-win? If the Heat lose tonight, is it over?
It just isn't, because both teams have shown they can win on the other team's court. It'll put a hell of a lot of pressure on you. The Heat have not played in an elimination game with this roster yet. They didn't have to play an elimination game to get the number one seed. That was decided before the final game of the regular season. They had the luxury of sitting out Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry in game five against Atlanta. No pressure there. They went into Philadelphia and never forced that game seven. So, yeah, it's must win as far as you don't want to have to play an elimination game. Elimination games are awful. We know that. We know even what it was like for the Panthers being down 3-0. So it's a must win because you spent all year saying, we're playing number one for number one, whether we get the Nets in the first round, whether we get a harder first round series. This is what we're doing. This is why you played 82 of these 102 games to wind up with home court, to say to yourself, at worst, we give ourselves two chances to close it out. So this is a huge game for the Heat. I wouldn't say must win, but it's a huge with a bunch of U's in the middle of that word. That's the way I'd say it.
Guys, thanks so much. Enjoy the game tonight. Again, hopefully we're talking more basketball, not off-season moves, coming up on our next Inside the Paint show. It's been fun. Thanks, as always, for making this great. The Big O Show rolls on next right here. Thanks again.